Welcome to the Gospel Sports Truth Podcast. I hope you guys are having an excellent week. We cannot wait to talk sports with you today. I am your host, Zay, the Fantasy Football Fiend, and I have my guy and yours, BK Wins. Holla at the people.
Hey, everyone.
Yo, so we are fastly approaching Super Bowl 59. We are fastly approaching March Madness. There's just a lot going on. The WNBA has all kind of trades and stuff going on. There's all kind of college hoops with the men and women. It's just a lot going on, BK. So you gotta, if you're a sports fan like we are, tons to talk about. And I can't wait to jump right into it. Remember, we are on YouTube at the Gospel STP. That's the Gospel STP. And if you haven't joined the Facebook group, the Gospel Sports Truth Facebook group, let's hop right in. What's the good word of the week, BK?
Yeah, I love it. There's something to your point, Zay. There's something for everybody, which is great. First on the docket tonight, Super Bowl 59 is set. The Chiefs and the Eagles. How do you see this going? Give us a preview of the Super Bowl that'll be in a week and a half.
So I think this really shapes up to be a great Super Bowl. It's almost like two puzzle pieces that just fit. And what I mean by that is you have a team that is great at stopping the run. You have the other team is great at running the ball. You have a team with a really good secondary or a really good defense in general. You have another team with a really good offense. Like it's a lot of the signs are there that this can be one with fireworks. This could be one of those, you know, one of the ones that everyone remembers, but for all the right reasons. And if all things are equal and fair, and you know what I mean by that, BK, because I don't know that all things are fair, but I really feel like the Eagles have the makeup to match up better with the Chiefs than we've seen any other team in their stints of making the Super Bowl. I really feel like in this particular Super Bowl, the Eagles actually have the better team. But it's just something about the bright lights of the Super Bowl that goats stand up. And unfortunately for the Eagles, they're going against who could arguably end up being the GOAT quarterback and the guy that can arguably end up being the GOAT coach. I don't know that they're going to be able to overcome that because I feel like at some point the game may be too big for Sirianni. That's the only deficit that I see with the Eagles currently. But and obviously when looking at the, you know, two quarterbacks, you know, Hurts has been hot this postseason. He's actually had the highest numbers as it pertains to deep passes over 25 yards. But Mahomes is Mahomes. So what do you got?
Yeah, so I do think that it will be a good game because both teams are very talented. Roster standpoint, they're the two most talented rosters. I mean, I would put the Niners in there, but injuries screwed them over, you know. They just were decimated with injuries. So, but from a roster standpoint, it's hard to argue against the Chiefs and the Eagles in terms of their talent. On the line of scrimmage, playmakers, special teams, all of those things are pretty equal or equal. I think for me, the thing that sways it is the Chiefs have the much better coach and they have the much better quarterback. And so ultimately in these kind of games, while the lines of scrimmage are what determine the games, the most important thing outside of that is coaching and quarterback. And unfortunately, those X factors aren't competitive. And so, and you give Andy Reid an extra an extra week to prepare, 2 weeks versus one. I just feel like that time will give Kansas City an advantage. That said, there's a blueprint out there that Philly can win, right? The Eagles have the number one defense. Barkley's the best back in the NFL. At least in my opinion, I think given both of those things and the fact that the Chiefs, we all know, have a penchant of playing one score games, literally like almost all of them are one score games. So inherently it's going to be close. I just think if we're looking for what's the more likely outcome, I just trust Kansas City to get it done more than I do Philly.
I can see that. I couldn't argue that if I wanted to. That's just been a logical thinker as it pertains to sports, which most people are fanatics, so they rush one way or the other. But I could definitely see where you're coming from with that. It's going to be an excellent game, though. That's the main thing that I'm looking at. I don't foresee this getting too far away from either team that neither team like won't be in it up until the fourth quarter. And that's all that you can ask for in a Super Bowl. So,
Real quick, say to your point, I think the only two things that would sway the game to get out of hand would be a lot of turnovers, like we've seen the Commanders against the Eagles, the Lions against the Commanders, the Ravens against the Bills, the Packers against the Eagles. We've seen some teams have a lot of turnovers in games, Rams against the Eagles. So when you see all those turnovers, that can dramatically shift the game, or if there's a key injury, not that I'm wishing this, wanting this, or even hoping this, but if you see like Hurts or Mahomes go out of the game, that could dramatically impact the outcome.
That injury would be more likely than one of the. Well, you can't say that because Hurts is a running quarterback, so he's just as likely to get hurt as Barkley. But well, yeah, but if and honestly, there's some key players on the defensive side of the ball that they got hurt. Like it can completely change a few things, but.
If Carter gets hurt on Philly, that's a huge loss. He's a stud.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it'll be interesting. Should be a great game, like we said. And definitely give us your thoughts on our Facebook page about who you got, why, and your thoughts about how we're looking at this. Next, it's never too early to talk about conference tournaments and March Madness. So, Zay, I'm going to ask, which teams to you at this point are true national title contenders on the men's side?
It's, I'll say, some usual suspects, if you will. Auburn, Duke, Bama, Memphis. Memphis isn't necessarily a usual suspect, but I do have them in there. Michigan State, Kansas, Tennessee, Houston. Basically, the teams that have shown themselves to be worthy to be able to deal with the added pressure that you have during tournament time, like the teams that have been able to, you know, play through adversity, able to kind of come up on the right end of things when they're in close games, because God knows that comes into factor when you're in the tournament. So the teams that have shown the, you know, dare I say grit, if you will, and been able to kind of get it out the mud, no matter what the situation was, they were kind of able to navigate. Now, obviously, as it pertains to college basketball, there's very, very rarely a perfect team. But the team with the least amount of warts, if you will, as it goes into tournament time, and more than any other sport or any other tournament, the coaches matter so much. Like, I don't know if this is a win one for the Gipper type of year for Michigan State. The scuttlebutt has been that Izzo may decide to retire. And if that happens, then, you know, maybe they know a little bit more in the locker room than they're letting know in other places. And they have the less, you know, go out on top type of mentality, if you will. Like you say all the time, BK, college sports is where you see the most difference, if you will, as it pertains to emotion. And that would definitely be one of those times that maybe you give 110% instead of 100, knowing that it's going to be coach's last go around. But yeah, I mean, pretty much usual suspects. The teams that have been playing well and kind of getting through the gauntlet all year. And then there are a few other teams that have a chance, but these are the guys that I think are most likely. It'll be out of these teams, my four, as far as the guys that are going to be in the championship game on my bracket, they'll be coming out of these teams. So I'll put it there.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. So I agree. I mean, Duke is really good this year. The one thing I'm concerned about them is they're very, very reliant on superstar Cooper Flagg. He's their all-world player. I wonder, against better teams that are able to kind of make somebody else beat you, where he's not able to score 30 a game and he only scores, let's say, 18 or 20, which is still a great game in college, don't get me wrong, but where he can't score 30, 35, 40 like he has been in some games. I wonder how Duke's complementary pieces are going to be able to get him over the finish line, especially in a one-and-done situation like the tournament where one bad shooting half and you're out.
It kind of reminds me of last year with UConn and who was it with? Edie.
Purdue.
Yeah. If you can just make Superman Clark Kent that evening, the rest of the team will take out the other guys. It kind of reminds me of that sort of a matchup, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah. So I got like Duke, Auburn, Kansas, Tennessee, Michigan State. A team that I love, but I am concerned with their ability to score in the tournament enough is Houston. Kelvin Sampson does a hell of a job there. And I've noticed they've been able to pull out some tough road wins. They won at Kansas, which it's tough to win in Lawrence Fieldhouse for sure. And, you know, they won a tight game at UCF the other weekend where they pulled that out at the buzzer. They're just a gritty, tough, hard-nosed defensive team that finds a way. But are you able to score enough to win six games in the tournament? That's the thing when I evaluate them that I wonder. But they're there in the mix too. Florida's really good. I think there's about eight teams that you can kind of point to that can get it. You know, Kentucky's another team that's very talented. You know, if the ball bounces their way, it should be really interesting, because to me, there's no dominant juggernaut team. There's a lot of really, really good teams, which should make for a great March.
Agreed. South Carolina Gamecocks beat previously undefeated LSU Tigers. Man, this was an epic SEC regular season battle. I got to be honest with you. This is one of those games that kind of where you kind of have to show what you got, you know, pull out all the stops, if you will. And LSU was doing their thing for the first little part of the game. You know, they were up by 10 at one point in the early goings of the game. Then the Gamecocks came roaring back, and I don't think LSU saw the lead again after the Gamecocks took over the lead. The thing is, the Gamecocks have one of the deepest teams, but they don't have the dominant player. If you look at, let's say if you look at USC, they have Juju Watkins. So there's several teams that have, you know, that star player. UConn has Paige up there. So USC doesn't have that lady. However, the totality of the team and the fact that they can literally go from first man up to last man on the bench and not lose very much, that's their strength, and also the coach. I kind of feel like South Carolina is set up to win this thing again, just because they don't have to the same recipe that you just gave a second ago, where you take out that the it person. Well, the same thing holds true. You go ahead and choose who you're going to take out on Carolina. Everybody else is going to step up, because everyone else can step up. Other teams, if Juju don't have a good night, they're not winning the tournament. If Paige don't have a good night, they're not winning the tournament. Notre Dame, same thing. Their star players they kind of have a duo, kind of a give and take, but still Hannah is the main one. But if they don't have a great night, those teams don't play great. South Carolina, I couldn't even tell you necessarily, depending on the evening, who their best player is. And that can actually be a great thing come tournament time, because if person A, for whatever reason, has the bubble guts and they just can't get over themselves that evening, well, person B can step right on up, and they're used to doing so. If person A doesn't step up on those other teams, they're hosed. So, and I do believe that the closest team to that sort of a makeup would be UCLA, and right now they're killing it. The only team that Carolina has lost to. I don't see Carolina losing to them twice, and I can definitely see them meeting back up in the championships. LSU is a contender for sure. UConn is a contender for sure. USC, Texas, Notre Dame, all contenders for sure. But they just don't have that last-ditch effort, if you will, that'll help them pull it out over the depth that the Gamecocks have. And we aren't at March yet. So who knows what happens with injuries and things of that nature. And again, when you're that deep and next man up is okay for your team, you're not as susceptible to injuries as some of these other teams are as well. So that's kind of where I am as far as Carolina is concerned. And they're having a heck of a season. And Dawn Staley, she just got rewarded with being the highest paid female coach in college history, and she deserves every single penny of it. I won't be satisfied until they're saying she's the highest paid coach in history, because to do what she's doing in South Carolina, that's like, you're hard pressed to find very many teams that win on a consistent, not just win, but are champions on a consistent basis. Like, I'm just saying, like, Don doing her thing, and I we very much appreciate it here in the state of South Carolina. Say that.
Yeah, so to echo that, I think that, I mean, look, Dawn Staley's a great coach, an all-time historically great coach. But the thing that I love the most about her is she's an even better person. And it's really hard to find somebody that's an, like, the only coach in women's college basketball, and just because of a number of title disparity, would be Gina Auriemma with 11 national titles. It's hard to overlook 11 titles. But outside of that, like, there's nowhere near Dawn Staley in women's college basketball. Like, she is an all-time great. But again, even a much better person. And I love her character, professionalism, the accountability. There's a reason why people want to play for her. Who wouldn't want to? You know,
and there's a reason why parents want to send their children to her and trust her with their children. Just because you're a good, like you said, just because you're a good coach doesn't make you a good person. You know, I won't say rarely, but you don't necessarily find both to be true within the same person and at the same level.
Yeah. As far as the teams go, I mean, you outlined the teams that are contenders, you know, UCLA, Southern Cal, Notre Dame, Texas, LSU, those are the teams that Notre Dame, there's six teams that are basically in the hunt that could give South Carolina on any given day trouble. I mean, we saw UCLA already get it done. History would say that the team that won the first time would win the rematch. It's about a 65% chance historically in sports. But I don't agree in this situation that would be the likely outcome, because I think there's a strength in numbers. In this situation, you brought up the emotion piece, right? If I take an NFL game, or even an NBA game, where I know team A is at home, the crowd is going to be very revved up for the game and the atmosphere will be great. But at the end of the day, the team B, who has more talent in the pros, is usually going to win the game. The crowd really isn't going to very much impact the outcome when the other team just has more talent. But in college, we see this all the time where the home team gets an early lead or goes on the field in football or goes on an early run in basketball, and the crowd carries them to the finish line. We see it all the time. Of course, then they storm the courts, and then there's fines, and there's all those fun things that come with that, and goalposts disappear in rivers and all kinds of difficult things. But I say all that to say that I think the advantage here goes to South Carolina in a potential rematch with UCLA, because I trust Coach Staley to make the adjustments from what didn't go well in that first meeting. And they also have, to coin a phrase, strength in numbers. They have so much depth that they'll be able to wear teams down. And in a tournament where you're playing six games to win a title, the depth will matter. And I just think Carolina has an advantage, not to mention the fact that they've been there, done that. So
moving right along here, our truth and nothing but the truth. What we got at first, BK?
So who's the best quarterback of all time to never have won a Super Bowl?
I have two, but I really only have one. But I have two because I figured that both of our number ones would be the same guy. So I think that the easy answer is Dan Marino. But my number two is Jim Kelly. What he did out there in Buffalo, he could have been the first quarterback with a three-peat. But he had a three-peat, but three losses. That's not the direction you wanted to go as far as that was concerned. But I mean, just to, how many quarterbacks?
By the way, good people out there, Dave's email address is no. Bill's Mafia, go get him.
Just tell the truth. Like, there were some pretty painful games. Like, there were some, like, I remember being a little boy at my cousin's house, Cowboy fans. I didn't have a dog in the fight, didn't really care. But I remember, I think the defensive guy's last name is Lott. And he was about to score a touchdown, and somebody came and knocked the ball out of his hands. And that was like the game was already out of hand. But I just remember that for some reason. And I remember completely tuning out the Super Bowl because the game was already over. But I've always been kind of a contrarian. So because everybody else in the house was going to the Cowboys, I was going with the Bills. And I just remember that for some reason. I don't remember much else about that day, but I do remember that. But yeah, those are my two. And I'm going to put you on the spot, BK. I am going to ask that you come up with a name other than those two that is at least an honorable mention that you can say, okay, I can see that.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I promise I'm not stalling. But the clear answer to me was Dan Marino. I would have never thought a quarterback who made the Super Bowl in his rookie year would never, ever make it back to another Super Bowl, let alone not win one.
It's not promised.
So, you know, and I'm not mad at your Jim Kelly one. I think that is definitely fair. I think
now you're stalling.
What's that?
That's it. Now you're stalling.
but for me, if I were to pick somebody, I would actually go right back to the same team. For me, I would say Josh Allen. He would be, for a guy who's accomplished what he has and how many times he's come close, two AFC title games, two very tough losses to Kansas City, including this year. I'd be hard pressed to come up with another name that hasn't won one that we didn't already reference, or you didn't already reference.
I would go Lamar Jackson before I went Josh Allen, if that's the direction that we're going in.
Well, the reason why, and I figured you would.
Oh, did you now?
Yeah. Yes, I did. But But I think for me, he really hasn't tangibly come close. And I look at how he's played in the postseason, and I hate to hammer the stats, but when you have 10 touchdowns in your postseason career, 7 picks and 6 fumbles, and I watch you hemorrhage games with turnovers in the postseason, that is, it's just hard for me. Like, Josh Allen is losing because Mahomes is just better, and he gets in these gunslinging games where, like, the Chiefs just somehow managed to win these one-score games and knock them out. It's not because Josh Allen has played bad or beating themselves, I mean. But I'm not mad at Lamar Jackson, for the record, but I'm trying to go through history, right? Like, different quarterbacks that I can think of that I consider great quarterbacks, you know, Elway, Montana, Brady, Troy Aikman, Rodgers, Favre, Steve Young, like all these guys won titles. So to try to find
even if you start to climb down the ladder slightly, and it's not necessarily the best, even some of those guys have won titles. Like, the question makes it difficult because who's great and didn't win?
Yeah. Although you'll love this.
What we got?
If I were picking an honorable mention, as some people I know love to do on the show, I would say that Joe Burrow would be my honorable mention.
I was thinking that, but then I was thinking, nah, he's a little too young. I can't go great yet. I guess I can. Now, like, he's, even though the Cincinnati figured out a way to do what they do, it hasn't been by lack of his play. Well, I can say it's been by lack of his playing, literally, because he's been injured. Other than that, he seems to be the kryptonite to Kansas City. He just got to stay healthy. What do we got next?
Well, it's time to talk some Buckeyes.
Okay.
So
a bad time to talk about the Buckeyes.
We know the Ohio State University celebrated another national title, and Coach Day was able to help make that happen. Two-part question. Will they repeat, and what does this mean for Day's legacy in Columbus?
Will they repeat? No. What does it mean for Day's legacy in Columbus? It means that you get one more year to beat Michigan, or you're out of there. That's what it means for Day's legacy. Look, at the end of the day,
no pun intended.
Like, right, no pun intended. I appreciate more than you could ever know, Ryan. Okay, let me look directly into this. Is for you, Ryan Day. This is directly to you, okay? I appreciate more than you could ever know bringing a championship not only to the Buckeyes, but to the Big Ten now for the second year in a row. I don't know who won last year. Don't want to talk about who won last year. But I know the Buckeyes won this year. We'll talk about that. But I do know that 2 years straight, the Big Ten has won the championship. One more year of anybody other than the SEC winning, and one more year of the top dogs in the SEC not quite going down the road that they normally go. And the one thing that I can say that Ryan Day has been instrumental in is in tearing down the regime. That has to add to your legacy. When you're a part of tearing down the machine that is the SEC, well, eons later, probably not by Buckeye fans, people will speak of you in a certain ilk that makes it seem like you're very much better than you are. That's pretty much where I am. Yeah, I don't like you. I don't, it's nothing personal. I don't like you. I don't like the way you coach. I fear what we look like if we don't have the training wheels that are Chip Kelly and Jim Knowles, which we definitely won't have Jim Knowles. And it seems like Chip Kelly may be going to the Texans. We'll see how that goes. I don't trust you. I don't. I can't. You haven't shown that when you're actually steering the ship that you won't run in the ground. That's where I am right now. And this is horrible on the heels of winning the championship. I understand. Let's take two steps back. Something I said towards the beginning of the show. You have avid sports fans who know the game, and then you have fanatics. I am an avid sports fan who has a higher than average knowledge of sports. But as it pertains to the Buckeyes, I am a fanatic, and yes, I do demand perfection. And Ryan Day, you suck against Michigan, and that is not tolerable. It's just not. I'm sorry. And it wasn't the time for the Can't Miss Weekly Rant of the week. But we just killed two birds with one stone. BK, what say you, sir?
Anytime there's a question of will Team A repeat or I get the field, the answer is always the field. So no, I don't think Ohio State will repeat. Can they? I'm sure they'll make the playoffs. They'll have a talented team enough. They'll make the playoffs, not a problem, which gives them inherently a chance to win it. However, no, the odds and my brain will tell me that, no, they're not going to do it. Do I really count on Coach Day going back-to-back? No. That's I would be an idiot to think he could do it twice in a row. As far as his legacy, I think what you said was perfect. It's honestly what came to my mind. Essentially bought himself another year. We distracted Buckeye Nation in the media from yet another non-Big Ten title beating Michigan season, and we won the biggest prize, so it's easy to overlook those two failures. But the question remains, next year you got to go at Ann Arbor, and I feel pretty safe in saying that Michigan's going to be a better team than they were last year. That's not really asking a whole lot.
And I don't think that Ohio State will be as good as we were this year.
And I don't think the offense will be as good either, although a lot of their pieces parts, it does appear that Tate is coming back and Jeremiah Smith is coming back. So they will have pieces parts there. Obviously, they lose Junkins and they're going to lose Will Howard. But I do think that they're
And Henderson,
yeah.
I'm not even 100% sure. Whoever the running back is going to be didn't even get on the field very much this year, whoever that guy is going to be.
Yeah, so it should be interesting for sure. But, yeah, I wouldn't pick them to repeat, no.
All right, so I got a confession to make as we go on to this next topic, BK.
Yes.
For whatever reason, the NBA just has been lackluster. Like, I just haven't been excited about the NBA. I don't know if it's timing, if maybe it's just, you know, it hasn't quite heated up yet enough, or it's missing something, and I don't know what that something is. With that being said, kind of want to give a bird's eye view or an account of who our mid-season favorites are to go to the finals. Maybe one of the things that make it a little less interesting this year is the fact that both you and I have the same exact contenders making it to the finals, and we kind of know it, and we aren't even at mid-season. We ain't even at the All-Star break yet, but we're about 90% sure who's going to make it barring injury. Call me crazy, but kind of already knowing, unless you're a Patriots fan and we were in our heyday, I'm knowing who's going to make it to the end. Isn't necessarily all that much fun, but what's your, I guess I kind of threw another question in there, but what's going on? Like, do you feel that way? First of all, maybe it's just me. Maybe it's not the NBA and not, you know, a good amount of fans. Maybe it's just a Zay thing. Do you feel the same way? Do you feel like the same atmosphere or environment that we normally have, or the passion that's normally there in general? I know the commissioner was even saying that it's like an all-time low in viewership. And I'm just like, as most, well, I won't say most other sports, but a lot of other sports are growing, the NBA seems to be at a halt or moving backwards. I mean, right now, there's a bigger buzz for the WNBA than there is for the NBA. There's a bigger buzz for Caitlin Clark than there is for whoever your favorite NBA player is right now. You throw out the name, I will gladly tell you that Caitlin Clark is beating that person at the box office. Like it's, I don't know, something just feels off. Get me back on track, BKR. Do you feel the same way?
So here's the thing. I agree with you, but I'm going to add a few things to
you. Okay.
So for me in recent years, much like the, and I think maybe this is a societal, cultural, no, it's a societal thing, where we don't have the attention span as a collective group these days to navigate through a 162-game baseball season, an 82-game basketball season, an 82-game hockey season. The seasons are too damn long. And so do I really have the time to invest all this time knowing three things? One, my team is terrible, which is the Bulls. So it's hard for me to invest time when I know my team sucks and my front office is even worse. So shout out to the Bulls front office to please start using your brain for something other than a hat rack. But number two, the season's too long. I don't have the time, the energy, or the interest to spend 6 months watching 82 games of teams that are going to load management their way through the regular season. You know, like your stars need to play and they need to play a lot, not like, oh, gee, you know, I'm tired. Or, you know, like, come in, come on. You're getting paid $40 million a year. Figure it out. So, and I think the third part of it is to your other point. And it doesn't mean that just because it's obvious at this moment that injuries or trades or something won't change it. But at this point, it's pretty obvious the two best and most talented teams are the Celtics and the Thunder. Yeah. I don't think you can watch the games and look, please, Cavs fans, I know I'm going to get hate mail and email and all this stuff. I can already see my Facebook blowing up. The Cavs are a very, very good team. I know they're the top seed in the East. I know they've been one of the greatest stories in the NBA this year with how literally all they did is change the coach and they've gone from a team that had no chance to win a title to a team that's number one in the East in terms of record. But make no mistake, yes, I've watched some games, specifically when the Cavs play the Celtics. I don't think you'd find a realistic person who understands basketball. Forget being a Cavs fan or Celtics fan, but just studying the talent and the rosters that wouldn't take the Celtics to beat the Cavs in a playoff series.
I don't agree at all. I mean, I don't disagree at all, excuse me. It's a team that's going on a really nice run, but when the rubber meets the road, a seven-game series is quite a bit different than going on a regular season run. There have been teams that didn't even gear up to play until after All-Star break. Didn't give a fat rat skinny behind what their record was when they went into the playoffs. They just needed to make the playoffs. Didn't matter. So I can kind of see, you know, I just really wish that something was. I don't know what's basketball just used to be for me a much more. I don't think it's lost its interest. I'm still interested in it for sure, but just the excitement, it's not the same. I don't know.
And real quick, because you know how I love the Vegas betting odds angles. So if you're wondering at home, and by the way, this is not a prediction, a best bet or anything like that, just running through the numbers to do due diligence here. But Celtics plus 210 to make it to the finals. Thunder plus 230, the two betting favorites by a lot. The Cavs are third at plus 850. Not surprising they have the second best record in the NBA behind the Thunder. So it makes sense that they're and first in the East. So it makes sense that they would be there. Some interesting ones that I want to throw out there is just a little, you know, I like to sometimes delve into the non-obvious options. The Mavs are plus 2,100. And from a value standpoint, now again, we both just told everyone that it's likely the Celtics and the Thunder for good reason. But, you know, things happen in sports, and if you're trying to dabble in something and, you know, take a shot, Mavs plus 2,100. The other sneaky one is the Suns are plus 4,300. And the reason why that draws my attention is, as they are now, this team won't win a title. But what if they were able to acquire Jimmy Butler? And then you're running out Booker, Durant, and Jimmy Buckets. That plus 4,300 is going to skyrocket in terms of betting odds. And you would love their chances a lot more than you do right now. And if you're going to do that, or you think there is going to be a move, the time to make that play is now, not once if he gets traded there, then you're trying to do it, because the value is nowhere near the same. Does that make sense?
Yep, sure does.
So just something to think in mind. Keep that nugget in the back of your head.
Sounds like a winner. It almost sounds familiar, kind of like when there were crazy odds that Jaylen Brown would win MVP, and you told everyone that would listen to go ahead and place your bets on him now, and I didn't, and he won, and I'm still a little salty about that. But I've made up for it since, BK, okay? I'm just speaking my truth right now, okay?
Well, to your point, though, you know, like, Connor McDavid was plus 700 to win the MVP and delivered. Jaylen Brown plus 700 to win. He delivered. You know, sometimes the odds are Vegas doesn't want to lose money and they want to protect themselves against liability. And they know that most people are going to always ride with the obvious choices. It's kind of like when we talked about Deion Sanders was the first person to talk to the Cowboys and all as a head for the head coaching job. And all of a sudden the betting odds were plus 100. And I'm going to share some behind the scene things here. So Vander and Zay and I are in our group little text, and, you know, Zay shot us that message, and Vander and I were like, there's no way this is happening. And I know, as sure as we all sit here, there were a ton of people in the betting public who ran to bet plus 100. And I'm just like, that's, you're literally lighting money on fire. What are we doing? And, you know, but it's interesting, those odds get inflated based on perception. And it really causes, it's why Vegas has those tall buildings, because they know people are going to run to the shiny star and not necessarily see the forest through the trees.
I have learned more about that in understanding that this year than I have had in my entire life. Like, literally, because I'm up 400% at this point. And that's if we're only counting the Vegas side of things. If we include the fantasy football side of things, it's that adds another I couldn't even tell you how far I'm up at that point. Like, just being able to tie in the two, which is what you're able to get here at the Gospel, getting kind of the best of all worlds. The Vegas side of it, the sports fanatic side of it, but then also the fantasy champion side of it. It's like you, as my grandma used to say, you can't lose for winning. So, yeah.
As they say, all we do is win, Zay.
All we do is win. Last up for our truth and nothing but the truth. What we got?
What's wrong with the South Carolina Gamecocks men's basketball team? 0-8 in SEC play this year, albeit 5 close losses and 3 blowouts. But they're the only team in the SEC that has a losing record, and everyone else has at least 4 games or more over 500. I'm going to go through some more stats and ask some follow-up questions here. So Lamont Paris, for those you don't know, in his third season as Carolina head coach, 47-40, and that's through the most recent game. His first year, he was 11-21, 4-14 in conference play. obviously nobody forgets the 26-8 and 13-5 in conference last year. And then this year he's 10-11 overall, 0-8 in the conference. So if I do a little breakdown, 21-32 or 4-22 in conference play, if you throw out year two, obviously 26-8 and 13-5 in his middle year. I guess here's the reason why I bring this up, Zay. I need your help trying to figure this out. So my brother and I, much like you and I, we agree on a lot of things. When Lamont Paris got his extension last year after historically great Carolina men's basketball season, he and I could not have disagreed more about this. My brother was a huge fan and thought it was very warranted and well-deserved that Paris got an extension based on year two results. And from my perspective, I can appreciate why. He had a great year. The team was great. And you want to protect and keep people there that you value and had a great year. The comment I made to him was, because we've seen this with the Carolina athletic department, we unnecessarily extended Will Muschamp. We saw how that turned out, right? We've extended coaches in the past unnecessarily. If the guy struggled in year one and we weren't sure he was going to make it through year two, and then he had a great year two, and then in year three, the team literally sucks. And I don't know how you would interpret 0-8 other than that. I guess my question to you are, do you agree with my brother that the extension was warranted and I'm just overreacting and should just shush my pie hole about this? Or do you think he's in trouble after? I mean, well, he'll make it through this year and he probably has one more year, I feel like. But do you think he's back on the hot seat? Do you think the extension was right? What's wrong with the team? Break it down. Make it make sense to me.
So a few things I'll kind of dig into here. First of all, do I believe that he deserved the extension? Sure, why not? I say that only because who else has gotten more out of the Carolina Gamecocks men's basketball team? Maybe you caught lightning in a bottle and it won't repeat itself. But if there's a possibility that there was something to what happened, I think you would be better off locking that down than going back to the drawing board. It takes a certain type of coach to be successful without top talent, which is what you're going to have to try to do in South Carolina. Until you rearrange and change the culture, and then Coach Staley is showing you, even Coach Beamer right now is showing you, kids will come to South Carolina, but you got to give them something to come to first. Knowing that that could have been the scenario if we had two back-to-back years under the same coach, that we may kind of be able to ride that wave, I think it made sense. Because kids aren't going to situations where they're getting picked up by Coach A, but Coach A might not have a job by end of this year. So I think they kind of had to do that just to see if they could bring in a little bit better talent and to see what he would be able to do with the talent that was already there and the talent that would come in. Do they suck? Absolutely. There's no other way around it. I don't know if other teams have just gotten better and South Carolina has stayed where they are, or if whatever the sermon that was being preached just isn't being received this year again. It was I feel good this Sunday, but then I'm back to my old ways next Sunday, and I don't want to hear what you said last week again. I don't know. But could he be, or will he be on the hot seat again? Absolutely. That's the way coaching works. Bill Belichick is no longer with the Patriots. Anybody can get it at the end of the day. You know what I mean? So due to the nature of his extension, I'm pretty sure that they won't let him go this week, this year, just because of what that contract may look like. But I'm going to be honest with you, though. Even his buyout for this year, giving who may be willing to come in and take his place, may not be too much to not consider the move. I'll put it that way. And at this point in the game, you know, you have South Carolina football is number one in town. I would have said a few years back, baseball was number two, but now I think that the South Carolina women's basketball team is number two, closely followed by baseball. South Carolina men's basketball isn't even on the chart. So I don't know that the fans are rabid enough to call for his job. I don't even know if most of the fans know who's currently the head coach. So sometimes you get a little bit more leeway when you aren't following up anything of note. So that's kind of where I am as far as this.
Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense. Just to comment on that, you know, you're right. He is going to get a longer leash because people just don't care here about the men's basketball team. The close losses can be attributed to lack of execution down the stretch, too many turnovers, a lot of missed free throws. Both of those will kill you in close games, especially two of them that they lost in overtime. You got to make free throws and close out games. You can't beat yourself. As far as going back to the extension, I guess here's my main argument, because I don't think that I did a great job of outlining it. I'm under the belief that what we saw in year one in the struggles is much more indicative of what we're going to see with him as head coach here. At this point, I've seen now almost 3 years. I saw two well below average years and one historically great year. I wasn't a big fan of the hire prior to it. I saw the year one, for lack of a better word, debacle. We'll say struggle. Debacle is probably too strong. Year one struggle. I saw the greatness of year two, and this year is definitely a debacle. You're not winless in 8 conference games after winning 26 games last year, and that's not a debacle. So I guess in my mind is I was never a big fan of the hire to begin with. And I know others may disagree with that, and that's fine. But if I'm operating under the premise that I'm not a big fan of the hire to begin with, he struggled in year one. He was great in year two. He's struggling big time in year three, or the program is in that case. At the end of the day, out of 3 years, two of them were bad. So I haven't seen anything to change my mind that he's not the guy. And so, personally speaking, for me, I would have, if he would have left after last year, I'd drive him to the airport. Thank you for a historically great year. We appreciate what a tremendous season this was. It was a lot of fun. Go take your paycheck somewhere else. We'll find someone else. Like, I'm not fighting to, like, listen, if someone said Dawn Staley's taking another job in college basketball, I would literally try to barricade every airport I could to prevent her from leaving town. If Lamont Paris left, I'd drive him to the airport myself. How soon do you want to get there?
So tell us how you really feel about the coaching situation.
I mean, this is the truth, right?
Oh, my goodness. All right. So top 5 favorite all time of something. What do we have this week, BK?
You can tell I was hungry when I suggested this. Top 5 favorite all time snacks.
I was torn on this, BK. And I'm going to tell you why. For me, a snack can be pretty lenient. A snack can be a multitude of things, BK.
Mm-hmm.
A snack can be some fried chicken at the Sphinx. That could be a snack, BK. That might not be a meal. It could be some Chef Boyardee. Could be, I mean, like, there's just, once I saw a few of your answers, I saw the mojo you were putting down, so I followed your lead. But I just wanted to say, when you said snacks, like for me, that could have been a Philly cheesesteak. Like that could have been. But I reined it in just a little bit.
I was wondering, because you know I like to give you a little bit of latitude here to let your creativity flow. I was wondering what you were going to do with this. So I'm very intrigued by your answer. I know the people are too.
So number five for me, BK, peanuts. I like hot peanuts. I like pickled peanuts. I like ranch peanuts. I like salted peanuts. I like peanuts. Yeah, peanuts are number five for me. Now, and just as a side note, if you have a Kroger in your area, they have hot peanuts that are better than the Planters peanuts. And you can get a whole lot more bang for your buck. It's like $3 for a little can of them versus like $1 for a little snack pack. Just thought I'd throw that out there to the people. What's your number five, PK?
My number five is Snickers. Love me chocolate. So, you know, I got to have my Snickers so I don't turn into a diva's A. So, you know, so clearly that, but Snickers number five. What you got for four?
Number four, popcorn. Movie theater butter popcorn, to be specific. Yeah, love popcorn. Something about the smell. It's just like brings back childhood memories. It's like I don't even have to eat it. Just to smell it in the air. It's just like, oh, popcorn. Like, love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. What you got for number four?
Reese's Cups.
That's my number three. Okay. So in the interest of full disclosure, I'm not a peanut butter person. I love peanuts. I love Reese's peanut butter cups, but I'm not a peanut butter person. But if you eat a frozen Reese's cup, I don't care if it's the mini, if it's the full size. If look, toss it in the freezer or chop it up in some vanilla bean ice cream. And we are talking life-changing experience. If you want to go to the upper parts of heaven, add a little bit of honey. Yeah, honey. Honey and cinnamon, actually. Mm. I'm giving away a lot of secrets here today, BK, but honey, cinnamon, Reese's Cups, vanilla bean ice cream, and we are talking like a little piece of heaven.
You're making me hungry.
A little piece of heaven, BK. Just throwing it out there.
Mm.
All right. You're number two.
Three.
You're number three. I'm sorry.
Number three. Chocolate chip cookies.
I can see that. I could definitely see that.
As a kid, Zay, my favorite cookie as a kid was, now I drew a blank, soft batch cookies.
Yo, I'm going to tell you what, though. I got spoiled because my high school, we had the Otis Spunkmeyer.
Mm-hmm.
They literally like put them in the little toaster oven there. So when you bought them, they'd be nice and fresh and soft. So it was almost like a soft batch, but not because it was going to remain that way until you ate them all, but because it was literally fresh out of the toaster. But yeah, I definitely see your point there. Number two for me, I kind of already mixed that in with my number three. My number two was ice cream. So, yeah, but if you like vanilla ice cream, but you want to kick it up a notch, I'm telling you, honey and cinnamon is where it's at, for sure. What you got next, BK?
So my number two is ice cream with a specific thing.
Okay.
Which are hot fudge sundaes. Once the weather gets warm, and by the way, since tomorrow it's hitting 70 degrees, for all of those who are in cold weather right now, sorry for your luck. But for those of us back in the game in the 70s, post pickleball tomorrow, I'll be making a little run to Rush's where they happen to have absolutely yummy hot fudge sundaes.
I went to Sonic's Krusty today. I went to Sonic's today. Reese's peanut butter cup, mini blast. Oh. Yeah. Amazing. Sure.
Love it.
Amazing. Number one for me. And look, I understand this is more of the younger generation type of a snack, but I don't care. And I'm man enough to say I like what I like. Give me some milk and cookies, and I am as happy can be. Give me some milk and cookies, and I'm a happy camper. Oreos, chocolate chip, it doesn't matter. The sandwich cream cookies, the lemon sandwich cream cookies. Those are extra special to my heart. They really are. But yeah, any kind of cookie. I am not far removed. Well, now I am far removed, but I can fondly remember going as far as dipping cookies in punch in vacation Bible school. Like, you got to dip the cookie in something. Like, we gonna dip it into. We got punch. That's what we dipping it in tonight, man. But cookies, just soften it up just a little bit, dipping it in something. And yeah, that's just, yeah, that's my one. That's my one.
I love it. I love it. So my number one, I know you're not a big fan of peanut butter, as you mentioned earlier, but I'm a big fan of peanut butter and chocolate chip. So it'll make no surprise to anyone. My favorite is peanut butter and chocolate chip cookies. However, I am going to tell you there's an honorable mention, which are Oreos. I love Oreos so much. Couldn't quite make the top five, but I love Oreos so much I can actually sing the Oreo song.
My God.
Which I will not do for all of our benefits. We don't want to decrease the ratings. We let the singing go to Zay. But however, I will tell you that peanut butter and chocolate chip cookies, by far my number one choice.
So I just saw the other day that you can buy Reese's peanut butter, like the same type of peanut butter that's in the Reese's peanut butter. That with a chocolate chip cookie? Mm-hmm. That with an Otis Spunkmeyer? And a nice frosty cup of milk?
Oh, game over.
I'm in hog heaven.
Game over.
BK, we got to hop into the money-making part of the show. What's our best bets?
I'm convinced, by the way, that this is why you keep me around.
If it makes money, it makes sense, BK.
Well, last week NFL, we nailed the Chiefs and the Eagles. I told you how much I wanted to be wrong about the Eagles, but we were not. This week, going to give you a little Super Bowl best bet early. So you guys have plenty of time to run to the window and make sure you get the winning ticket. At the time that I looked this morning, Kansas City was a 1.5-point favorite over the Eagles. So essentially a pick 'em, because you're not really worried about the 1.5 at that point. You're basically picking who you think's going to win. Well, you guys know from earlier in the show, you give me the much better quarterback and the much better coach. This seems like an easy thing to me. I like the Chiefs. I would take them -1.5. I would also take them at the money line. By the way, some of you, and I did this parlay last year, I bet on the Chiefs plus Mahomes to win MVP. You'll see another parlay this year. The betting odds to do it by itself aren't great. Mahomes plus 120 for MVP. But give me the Chiefs and Mahomes as well as a parlay. I like that to happen as well. Kansas City will three-peat, and Mahomes will win the MVP. Why? Because he's the best player on the team that's going to win the Super Bowl, and it's normally a quarterback award. So I like that. That's this week's best bets.
I'll put that in. I actually went with a teaser with the Chiefs getting 4.5 points. And no, was it four? How many points did they get? Yeah, 4.5 points. And then the over.
Mm.
So I think both of these teams can score pretty well. I can't remember what the over was, but I was like, this kind of makes sense. So
I think it's around 47.5, 48.5, pretty close to that. So if you moved it 6, that'll definitely help you out.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm not BK. Don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm just letting you know what my first. Then the other thing that I was thinking is that this line is going to move. Like, and I'll see if I want to take another bet on the other side with another teaser possibly once it moves. But for right now, I got to jump on this.
Yeah, what's interesting to me is the line hasn't moved a lot so far. You know, it really has been pretty consistent, although I think that as we get closer, because again, we have 9 days, 10 days till the Super Bowl. I think you're going to see a lot more movement next Friday, Saturday, Sunday before the game than right now. But there is something to be said about hedging your bets, right? You know, so I may be confident in Team A winning, in this case, the Chiefs, but later on, there might be some injuries that get released and make me want to hedge those bets and take Philadelphia just to kind of minimize that risk and that loss should it go badly.
And depending on how you go about doing it, there's a way that you can actually still win both bets. So not hedging just for hedging's sake, but kind of giving yourself a little bit of a cushion in one direction and in the other, and having the leeway to be able to win both, and in some cases the likelihood to be able to win both. But
agreed.
We are now to what seems to be one of the favorite parts of the show, the can't miss weekly rant. You want to go first or you want me to go first?
So I'm going to ask as the host of this show for permission for something.
Okay.
I actually have two rants.
Okay.
And with your
back-to-back rants, so do you want to give one and then I give one and then you give the other? How do you want to do this?
We'll alternate.
Okay.
So I'll give rant number one. I know that most of you don't pay attention to professional tennis. And I understand that it's not a big popular thing here in general. But for those of you who watched the Australian Open, there was a tremendous backlash and outcry because the greatest tennis player of all time, Novak Djokovic, 24 Grand Slam titles, by the way, 10 of those in Australia, no one's close to that, got first accused of faking an injury, then got so much criticism when he retired after the first set in the semifinals from a hamstring tear that he got booed off the court and continued to get so much criticism that he faked the injury that he actually went ahead and released to the world his MRI confirming the hamstring tear, so that everyone could see and confirm that there really was an injury and he didn't fake it. First of all, he's an all-time great player. He's the greatest player to ever lace him up in Australia when it comes to tennis. You're going to boo the man? He won a tournament with a hamstring tear in the past. This one much worse, just to distinguish. He's won two majors there in the last 4 years with significant injuries, and you're going to question the man that he's going to retire because of an injury? Do you think he wanted to give up winning a title for fun? You guys have to do better. I understand that you paid a lot of money and you're upset that you didn't get your money's worth, and I can appreciate being frustrated about that. But nobody comes to your work and boo when you're hurt or you're not feeling your best. You don't boo an all-time great, especially at that venue or any venue for that. That's terrible sportsmanship. It's a lack of class. Do better. Can't say enough bad things about that. And this should never, ever, ever happen again.
My rant isn't specifically on a particular athlete. It's just in general. I've seen a few posts lately, and I've heard things in the past too that kind of lends itself to the same thought process, but stop putting athletes on the pedestal. They aren't there to be a role model. They aren't pastors. They aren't even politicians. They weren't voted into office. They never pledged to do right by you or do best by you. None of that. They pledged to make as much money as they possibly can, playing a sport that they perfected. That's it. That's all. Now, in a perfect world, they would acknowledge that kids look up to them and they emulate some of their actions and behaviors. But guess what? That's where your job as a parent comes in. Yeah. Quit letting other people raise your kid. Like, my 9-year-old son loves Ja Morant. But we don't just have Ja Morant conversations that's talking about the dunk that he just put on somebody. We have Ja Morant conversations that talks about how decisions that Ja Morant has made has almost put his career in jeopardy, millions of dollars in generational wealth in jeopardy. So don't just talk about, you know, the game or when they hit the game winning shot. If the athlete that your kid happens to like or puts on a pedestal happens to do something that isn't that great or to be highly spoken of, use that as an opportunity to do a little bit better for their understanding of what life is. Because at the end of the day, none of us are perfect. And also at the end of the day, a lot of us aren't even trying to be. A lot of these athletes that your kids are looking up to aren't trying to be perfect. They don't have to be. They've already gotten what they were out to get. So just let people be who they are and understand that nobody's going to be perfect. And if your children want to emulate them that much, then maybe that's a conversation or more conversations that you need to have with you and yours versus demeaning an athlete because they didn't raise your child right. Go figure. Back on you, BK. Wrap it up for us. Bring it home.
So for those of you listening and those of you watching, I want you to hear my tone and how serious I am about this, because something came into the news today that really both disappointed me, frustrated me, and quite frankly, angered me. So by now, we're all familiar with Deshaun Watson and his issues with how he treats women and the cases and his, we'll just say, love for massage therapists. Well, it came out today that Ravens kicker Justin Tucker decided to follow in those same footsteps, allegedly. Here's my thing. I don't care. It's even worse that it's professional athletes, to Zay's point, that so many of us look up to and consider role models in different situations. Not saying those two specifically, but in general. Here's the thing. I am tired, sick and tired. It's unacceptable. It's absolutely baffling, embarrassing, pathetic, disgusting, unacceptable. It needs to stop. Why is it okay, or why is there not more backlash that women are constantly harassed, assaulted, and all the ungodly, awful things that women have to go through, and that these celebrities, whether it be famous celebrities or, you know, actors, actresses, sports athletes, any of the such, or even people that live a few neighborhoods from you who think it's okay to do this, please stop treating women this way. It's not okay. It's absolutely, you should be embarrassed. And I'm going to put a call out now. I'm calling out everybody. This needs to stop. Treat people how you would want to be treated. You have a mom. You may have a sister. Would you want your daughter to be treated this way? Would you want your wife to be treated this way? Your girlfriend, your mom, a relative? Would you want them to go through this? I hope to God not. Because if you do, that's a bigger issue that I don't have enough time for. But please do better. I don't want to hear any more stories about this moving forward. I don't want to talk about it moving forward. I don't want to, because again, don't talk about it, be about it, do better. Actions speak louder than words. Hold yourself accountable. Be the person that you want to be, that you want people to treat you as. this can't happen anymore.
Agreed, BK. And my friends and congregation, that is the truth and nothing but the truth. We will be back to you again on next Wednesday, wrapping up the weekend that was. We won't have much football to talk about this coming Tuesday, but I have a feeling we'll be able to fill it in with a few things there. But make sure you guys, again, join us on YouTube at The Gospel STP, on Facebook at The Gospel Sports Truth Facebook group. For this week, we're out. And remember, always tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth. Later, y'all.
We out.